There's the theme music. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And this show is intended for everyone looking for love. Whatever your age, background, dating history, or sexual preferences or intentions, we're going to focus a little more on dating after 50 with my wonderful guest returning again, and I'm so pleased. Hello, Joan Price.
Hi, Diana. So glad to be with you.
Oh, I'm so glad you're back. And Joan is the author of she edited the third book, but she's the author of the first two books, Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex, Better Than I Expected, Straight Talk About Sex After 60. And then you edited the book that I bought at the ASECT conference in June in Monterey, California, Ageless Erotica.
Yes.
And it's a fabulous, sexy read.
Isn't it fun? All the writers are over 50. They're 29 writers.
Yes.
And when I told them the parameters of what I was looking for this anthology,
right,
I said the characters had to be over 50 also, and they had to be having hot, steamy sex. However, it had to be within the context of what really goes on for us sexually. So if there's an arthritis problem, they had to solve that, not ignore it. And it was wonderful to see what people wrote. These are amazing erotica writers.
Really true. I mean, I think any age would be turned on by reading this book.
I think so, too.
And I often suggest to my female clients who are having trouble with orgasm that they self-pleasure reading erotica, because women often have a better time, a better experience if they're reading rather than watching. It helps them focus.
Right.
So I don't care what age the person is, and you can see Joan's book, Ageless Erotica, and her other two books, which I highly recommend, to go to joanprice.com.
I'm coming out with another book in January.
Oh, yeah, tell me.
It's called The Ultimate Guide to Sex After 50,
How to Maintain
or Regain a Spicy, Satisfying Sex Life.
Okay, well, I'm going to have you back on for that book, but I want to have you back for part two this year.
I'll come back every other day, Diana.
I'm going
to
talk to you off the air, but
you're so much fun.
Oh, thank you. You are too. So I'm thinking in about a month, but I'll talk to you off the air. So there's a great quote in your Ageless Erotica, the hotel lounge story.
Yes.
And it's, beautiful young people are accidents of nature, but beautiful old people are works of art.
Yes, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, I think that's a great, great quote. And we decided there's so much to talk about, and we've talked about it on several of my shows in the past, your books, but maybe we'll focus a little bit more on DWO, your chapter 18.
Dating While Older.
Yes. And that's in your book, Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex. And, of course, Joan, you are such an amazing writer and blogger, so people need to also go to your website to read your blogs. There's just so much information.
Well, there is. And my blog is full of news, views, reviews.
Yes.
Reviews of sex toys, reviews of books, reviews of films sometimes, and just lots of news and expert interviews and whatever is on everybody's mind.
Yes, and you have good interaction with your online folks.
What I want is to build a community of people talking out loud about older age sexuality.
Yeah.
I don't want to just be a voice and people nodding quietly. I want to know what you think. I want to know what my readers think. And so I invite them, and it's finally working. They're feeling this is a safe place to talk out loud about these things.
Yeah, not enough people, until you came on board, not enough people were talking out loud about senior sexuality. And I'm quoted in your first book. I guess it was your first book. Maybe it was your second book. And you got a lot of experts, including my friend Candida Royale.
That was in Naked at Our Age.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so there are so many myths around aging and sexuality, but maybe since we promised the audience that we'd talk about dating, and it's more or less dating over 50.
Okay.
But as I said at the top of the show, this show really is intended for everyone looking for love, whatever the age.
You know, I really learned that. I was giving my workshop in Minneapolis at the Smith and Kitten a few months ago, and I'm going to be there again next week. If people are listening this live, I'll be there October 17, 18, 19, I think.
Yeah, I saw that on your website.
Yeah.
And of course, lots of people listen to the archived version of this show.
Yes. So I was giving this workshop called How the Heck Do I Date at This Age, which is geared for people over 50. And in the audience, there were also a bunch of younger people. They were mainly the staff of Smitten Kitten, and they were interested in what I have to say. They thought they were just listening so they would have the information for the customers. But it turned out, they told me, everything you said applies to our age, too.
Of course.
And so we decided now when I give this workshop again, it's not going to be restricted to the over 50. It'd be for anyone who wants to look. Because all of these things about how to use online dating, how to avoid the creeps, how to reject nicely, how to take it when you're rejected, how to figure out what you're looking for, all of that applies to every age.
Every age.
Every age.
Including getting psychologically prepared for dating. I think that the success depends on how motivated and self-confident a person is. But most people just don't get there automatically. They really have to examine their fears and hopes and maybe even brush up on some skills. And my bias is that some people not only need to read your books, but maybe they need some psychotherapy so that they, a few sessions anyway.
Well, true, because a lot of people who have failed relationships, and this we're going to gear to the over 50 a little more because we will have accumulated more failed relationships than the 20-year-olds. Often if we find that a relationship is failing in the same way every time, the same issues come up, well, maybe we're bringing that into the next relationship, and it won't be resolved by finding a new partner. It will be resolved by working with someone to figure out what's going on with us and how to change it if we want change. And often what's going on, women say, I keep picking the same man over and over again, the same kind of man.
The same kind of man.
Who abuses me emotionally or who ignores what I want or who doesn't care about my pleasure sexually or whatever the issue is. This happens to me over and over. Aren't there any good men out there? And I say, yeah, a whole heck of a lot of them. So let's look at how you are presenting yourself that might be attracting the people you don't want, or how you're screening for a future partner that might be drawing in just what you don't want without you realizing it.
Yes, and so patterns. People need to recognize patterns. And if you're over 50, maybe these patterns have been in place a very long time. So I think you're going to have, if you're a single person, whether you're widowed or divorced or even never married and you're over 50, you really do want to look inward. And I think a big secret in dating is that sex appeal comes from self-appeal.
Oh, yeah.
You're much more likely to meet someone when you're feeling your most attractive. Do you feel attractive? And I think if you think, well, you touched on this a little bit, but whether the people that you've dated are good or bad in terms of experiences, maybe each person, if you keep your eyes open, served as a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually encourage my singles to not have regrets because, reframe it, they were
exactly.
all preparation on your path to love as long as you keep your eyes open.
You are segueing into one of the biggest things that I tell people, too,
mm-hmm.
that, you see, often when people are dating again after losing a spouse or being dumped or whatever the issue is,
mm-hmm.
they think, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to navigate this. Mm-hmm. I was with someone for 30 years. How do I do this now? And often they put much too great an emotional thing on meeting the perfect person right away. And they'll say,
that's
online
so true.
Dating doesn't work for me. I had 3 dates. They were all awful. Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to quote Dan Savage, the sex columnist.
Oh, and you were on his program,
I read on your website.
Yes,
I was on his program. I was on twice, in fact. And he says, every relationship fails until one doesn't. And I think that's
great.
Isn't that brilliant? So...
So every relationship fails
until one doesn't. So
yeah,
all of these bad dates along the way, that's good. That's getting mm-hmm. you closer to the one that's going to work out. But also it's a way to practice dating. We don't know how to do that anymore. Great. Let's have a bunch of dates and find out. Let's practice how much to divulge, how to have a give and take in the conversation instead of a monologue, how to... evaluate, am I asking for the wrong thing in my online profile if I keep getting the same guy who isn't right because of A
mm-hmm.
or B? What is it I'm saying I'm looking for that's bringing these people who aren't right? It gives us all sorts of practice, how we present ourselves, how we feel about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we just see each first date, even if it's the only date with this person, as, oh, good, I got to practice dating, and I learned this about myself.
And of course, and then maybe it would be even more useful to write it down, keep a journal of this.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Because you want to continue to think about who you're looking for and why.
Right.
And you have much to consider. And especially if you're over 50, because you're not building a family with someone or just starting out in life,
mm-hmm.
but you can have some fun. I mean, I dated for about 6 years after I was widowed before I met, so Charlie died and then I met Brian, almost exactly 4 years ago now, and
could you guess how many first dates you had before you met Brian?
Yes, 50.
50. 50. Isn't that great for people to know?
In Los Angeles and in Seattle, and I waited about a year and a half before I started to date after Charlie died, and so I kissed most of them, even if it was just one date, goodnight, because you get a lot of information by a kiss goodnight.
You do.
Yeah.
Good for you.
So I kissed about 50 frogs before I met my prince, and I'm... I couldn't be happier. But I persisted, and I was optimistic when I was dating. And I did a lot of the things that you talk about doing, and we're going to... explore this, of course, more. But, you know, I found that dating was a lot of fun, and it was definitely a growth experience.
Yes.
And it certainly had its down moments and frustrations, but the upside was terrific, and I met interesting people.
Yes.
I learned more about myself, and so it seemed like it was really worth the effort. So, I mean, part of this discussion we're having, Joan, is to, especially for our older listeners, but listeners of any age to not give up, to persevere.
One of the really cool things about first dates is it's a unique opportunity to find out about someone for an hour, to hear the story, to hear about whatever you ask, they'll usually answer. And usually honestly, because it's a whole thing that's expected. Okay, we have an hour together over coffee.
Right.
And so how much can I learn about this person? How much do I want to tell this person so that we can tell whether we want to have a second date? It's not an audition for the rest of your life. It's just an audition for a second date.
Exactly. And you write about that, and it's so important. It's just an audition for a second date. So really important to listen well and not make the conversation all about oneself. You know, the self-absorption can be a real turnoff for people.
That is a huge thing. And I find that, well, I'm going out on a lot of first dates myself these days. And I keep encountering men that do the monologue thing. And I go away from that thinking he didn't care who he was with. What did he learn about me?
But I that was a turnoff for me, too, back when I was dating. Yep.
I did something about it because a friend of mine, a male friend, said he's just nervous. I said, okay, but, you know, let's still, he's out on a date with me. Why? To talk about himself only? No. So I emailed this one person that I had been excited about meeting. He was attractive. He was doing interesting things in his life. We had a lot of the same values and a lot of the same things that we like to do. And I thought, oh, this will be fun to meet him. And he just talked. And so when I got home, I thought, okay, what is there? I'm risking nothing because I'm not going to see this person anyway. So I sent an email and I said, do you realize how much you talked and how little you asked me?
Oh, good for you. That took a little courage.
I did. And I came and I said, I get the feeling that you weren't even interested enough in me to ask me any questions to find out about my life, which, by the way, is quite interesting.
Well, indeed. Did he know that you were the author of these books?
Well, he did know, and that's what really confounded me, because usually men, whether they're interested in me or not, they want to know how about doing this work. What's it like to write and talk about senior sex all day? What is that life like?
Right.
And yet he had absolutely nothing to ask about that. And I thought, well, so I sent off this email and he wrote back, you are absolutely right and thank you for making me confront this. I was in pain. I didn't know that. He had had a fall. I didn't know that. I was in pain and I thought I probably shouldn't have come, but I'll make the most of it. Oh, I'll just talk and the hour will be over. And he said, I didn't really think about that there was a real person across from me, a real person with real feelings, and I'm sorry, and can we do it again? Give me another chance.
And did you?
Yes.
Wonderful. And did it turn out better the second
day? Much better. Much better.
Good. And he was able to listen?
He was in fact, committed to listening.
Yeah, I would think.
And you know what he told me? And I didn't really, he told me this face-to-face, not in the email. He said, I'm really intimidated by the work you do. I'm interested, but I was afraid that if I ask questions, would I be coming on to you? Would you perceive it as I'm coming on to you, or would you be offended? Or, you know, he didn't know what to do about it. Well, if he had just broached the subject, it would have been resolved. But anyway, it made me realize, even though I preach about honesty and authenticity, it's hard in the moment.
It can be hard in the moment.
And by the way, if you come back and you say, okay, here's what I didn't tell you face-to-face, but I think it would be good for both of us if I express this now, and not to do it in a rude way, you know, like, do you realize that over the course of 60 minutes you listened for 30 seconds? I didn't do anything like that, but just about how it made me feel that he wasn't asking me anything. And that was legitimate. Yeah. I figured whether we ever went out again, which we did happen to, but even if we didn't, it would be useful in his dating experience to know that that was the perception.
Because lots of first dates, females, wouldn't be so honest or even have the insights that you have and the ability. You know, back when I was on onlinematch.com and eHarmony, I put down that I was a psychotherapist and a gerontologist, but I left out that I was a sex therapist.
Uh-huh.
And then I would always tell them, if they're especially, if the first date was going pretty well, because I used it kind of as a filter.
Yeah.
Some of the men were intimidated, just like your guy expressed that, you know, oh, this woman knows so much about sexuality, and I'm not so sure.
And I've had that reaction from people, but I think that's good for screening, too.
Yeah, it is, absolutely.
Absolutely, because if someone is uncomfortable with what I do for a living, then we're not a match.
You're not a match, that's right. And Brian passed his first test even before our first date.
How did he do that?
Well, I asked for a phone call. We'd just been emailing, and so I told him I was a sex therapist, and he said, without missing a beat, oh, that is very exciting.
Oh!
So he embraced it, and certainly...
My heart jumped at that.
Oh, this is so sweet. And so, yeah, I got very fortunate, but I really did meet a lot of different guys, and I didn't find one until Brian. And you know, it's if people work on themselves and they're more evolved and wiser, and, you know, they do things like they give back without needing anything in return, you know, in their lives. I sometimes call that, even though I'm not Jewish, it's a mitzvah.
Yes.
You give something without needing anything in return, and the form of giving back can be creative or social or personal or financial, but you know, we have that possibility when we're older to be wiser and more giving. And if somebody's too self-absorbed and neurotic, that's usually a red flag, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. What if he's just nervous and silences feel longer than they really are?
Yeah.
So you and I, we're used to listening to people. Silences are not going to bother us because we know there's something beyond the silence that's waiting to come out. But for someone who doesn't know that, who isn't in a field where that is a natural ebb and flow, will maybe go, oh, my gosh, we haven't talked for 2 seconds. I better say something else.
Yeah, I just went to a conference 2 weeks ago given by a wonderful therapist who's been in the field over 30 years, Michelle Weiner-Davis. And
yes.
You probably know her, of her. Or
I
anyway,
know of her, and I quote her in the new book.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Because she focused on two of her, I think, 7 or 8 books, Divorce Busting and The Sex-Starved Marriages.
Yes.
Marriage. And so in the conference, which was sponsored by Washington Marriage Family Therapists, she had some really good clips that of herself with clients. And I noticed that there were, at times, pauses of silence before she'd jump in. And I took that as a good lesson for me, because sometimes I don't allow quite enough silence as people, especially if you're dealing with introverted people, they need time to process their thoughts.
And if they've said the last thing, you certainly know this, but listeners might not. If they've said something and then there's silence, that thing they said is hanging in the air, but the thing they didn't say is hanging in the air, too.
Yeah, can you think of an example? I think that's very profound, Joan.
Let me see. Can I think of an example? Okay. Okay, let's say this is a woman and she has just said, I don't know how much longer I can go on being sexually unsatisfied, and my husband doesn't give me what I need.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if instead of jumping in, we just wait a moment, she mm-hmm. might say, and I don't know how to ask for it.
And I don't know how to ask for it. See, that's right.
And that's what we want to work on then, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yes, so many women of any age don't know how to ask for it.
Yes.
I mean,
that's so often the issue, and especially as we age, and I can't remember if we've talked about this before, but it's worth repeating anyway.
Oh, sure.
Things change in us. What we used to respond to changes. Our erogenous mm-hmm. zones may even be mm-hmm. different. The kind of touch we want is different. The pressure, the timing could all be different now. And yet, if we're with a partner whom we've been with for a long time, we've trained this partner, trained in quotes, to give us what he or she thinks we want, because we did in the past. And if we can't speak up and say something like, I love you and I love our sex together and our touch together, but my body's changing and I used to like that thing, but now I don't mm-hmm. like it as much. Could we please explore what might work better for me?
Yeah, that's beautifully. Beautifully stated, and often so necessary.
Often so necessary. And we think, well, this is a person that's been with me 35 years. Shouldn't he be able to read my mind by now? No.
Mm-hmm. No.
No. We're notoriously bad at that.
So, Joan, we're about to come up to the half-hour break, but I'd like to explore a little bit more the dating while older.
Good.
And, you know, a few things like a few tips in terms of the conversational skills. We've touched on it a little bit, but because we talked about being a good listener. But I think, you know, other things like don't forget to use a little chemistry.
I have a little chemistry in my pocket. Do you mind if I spray it around?
Yeah. Yeah, you said it already. This is an interview for a date, not for a job. So if you're attracted, show it. You can do it in a subtle way. You know, hold eye contact, smile, lean forward.
And extend your hand. You don't have to grab the other person, but if you just mm-hmm. let your hand be, say if you're in a coffee shop, your hand is on the table a little more towards the other person than towards you.
Mm-hmm.
And if the other person inches a hand towards yours, well, you know, there's some conversation going on that way.
It's true. It's true.
But if you stand with your arms folded over your chest, that's perceived as don't get any closer.
Oh, yeah. The body language is so important.
There's so much we can do with body image. And so often we respond to body image even if we're not aware. We couldn't intellectualize the signals. Like mm-hmm. if she's playing with her hair, she's thinking she's open to being touched,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing that we may mm-hmm. not know that we know that, but we respond to that as if we knew it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And often, you know, we give mixed signals, too. We think, I really want to get closer to this person, but I don't want him to think I'm forward, and so I'm just going to sit here quietly. And we don't smile, we don't laugh,
and we don't
fun to be with.
And we maybe don't have a relaxed face.
Yes, right.
You know, the face needs to be friendly, with soft eyes and a mouth.
And you know what? As we are doing online dating, mm-hmm. for goodness sake, smile in your photo.
Oh, yes. Well,
oh
we're going to come back.
We got to talk about photos when we
yeah,
come
we
back.
Yeah, we
got to
talk about photos and the profile, because a lot of people make mistakes with their photos and their profiles. So, and this is for any age, not just dating while older. So, we'll go to our break and we'll come back, and Joan Price and I will have more discussions about all of this. So, stay tuned, please. We are back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm here with one of my favorite guests of all time, Joan Price, the author of Naked at Our Age, talking out loud about senior sex, Better Than I Expected, her first book, Straight Talk About Sex After 60, and she edited Ageless Erotica. Oh, it's such a sexy book to read. So we're talking about dating over 50, over 60, because there are some special kinds of things, although this applies to people of all ages. And just before the break, Joan, we were talking about, is your face, do you have a friendly face? Or is it, and maybe looking in the mirror is a good thing to do before you go out. Work on looking pleasant and happy as a natural state of being. Because some people have kind of an angry looking face and they need to...
You know what it often is? It's something so simple.
Yeah, tell me.
We don't see well without our glasses, so we're squinting and scowling.
All
we have to do is
good,
put on our glasses.
Yes.
Okay? So simple.
So simple. But I want to add, too, that if somebody gets depressed when things don't work out right away, like for a first date, maybe not getting a second date, I think it's a good idea to put a list of things that we're grateful for.
That's a good idea.
On the bathroom mirror or on the refrigerator door, and then make sure you remind yourself of all the good things in your life. I don't know the source of this, but a statistic was that some people complain as many as 70 times a day.
Ooh.
And complaining tends to, I even notice it, sorry to say, my mother, who's 92, she used to be so positive and optimistic, and of course she's got aches and pains, but I do notice her complaining a lot more. And I guess that's one of the factors of aging for some.
I don't know if it's aging so much as maybe loneliness.
Could be loneliness,
too. She might feel that she's powerless. She can't solve these things that are going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so she needs someone to talk to about them. And there you arrive. You get it.
Yeah. Well, I do.
And maybe if she had a wider, I mean, I don't know your mother, but maybe if she had a wider circle of friends and they could about things together.
Yeah. She lives in a really nice retirement place in California. So I think she's got the friends, but they're all kind of failing because they're all quite elderly. So, you go there and there are lots of people using walkers and that sort of thing.
Do you want some advice? Because I have an idea.
I would love it.
Anytime
I'm too,
she starts
I'm too close to
go,
to this, you know.
Yeah, I know. We often can't see what, even though we have the skills to help other people see it. If it's us, it's so hard. But what I'm thinking is, if when she starts in with her complaints, you said, "Hey, Mom, would you tell me a story about something lovely that happened to you when you were my age, or could you tell me a story about one of your happiest days with Dad?" Or somehow get her thinking in a different way, talking in a different way. Her face will change. I think it could change the whole thing.
That's such a good idea. Thank you for that. So how to deal more effectively with your elders?
Yeah.
Hey, Mom, tell me a story.
Yeah.
When you were my age or,
you know,
when you were happier.
You know how that came about that I think that way is when I was the most deeply in grief after the love of my life, Robert died.
Yes.
And I just could barely be with people. I didn't want to talk to people. I didn't want to hear them talk. They were saying all these platitudes, that I couldn't bear, like, "Oh, you'll be together in heaven." Don't ever say that to a grieving person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what broke through my grief were the people that said, "Tell me a story about Robert."
Right.
Or the ones that said, "Can I tell you a story about Robert?"
Exactly. I had the same experience when my husband died. Yeah.
And
Tell me a story.
That was so precious. I learned wonderful things. I was able to share the good times. I didn't have to talk about his illness and his death and that I'm without him. I could talk about when things were together. Things were wonderful. And they want to hear about that. And it just lifted me so much.
Of course.
And then you know what else
people
say? That's
very good advice, Joan. Excellent.
Someone said to me, he talked about you all the time. And I went, oh, my gosh, what did he say?
Mm.
And they would tell me these things he had said about me and about how he loved me, that he had told other people when I wasn't there. Oh, my gosh, it couldn't have been a greater gift.
Of course. What a gift.
Yeah.
A gift.
So I think if we encounter people that seem to us to be negative, if we can just get the right tell me a story going on, it could really open up something wonderful.
That is very perceptive, and thank you for that. Because I needed to hear that, because I love my mother, and I am aware of her difficulties right now. And, you know, I got lucky because when I was a kid and growing up, she was so positive and affectionate and loving. And I often remind her of that, just, you know, that I got a good, secure attachment start.
Oh, there are so many questions you could ask, like, how did you know when you were in love with Dad?
I have asked her that, but...
In anything that's going to make her remember and smile and start talking, you might want to record what she says. Could be a very precious story.
Yes. And I have encouraged, just the other day, I encouraged a 72-year-old client to record his father, who's 93, and they've had a difficult relationship, but to get some oral history, because his father had a really fascinating history.
Mm-hmm.
And but my mother did write a memoir.
Oh.
And so with a lot of family pictures in it. So, I mean, it was self-published and all that, but, it's really nice that she has this.
Well, then here's another question for her. If you were updating your memoir, what would you include?
Very nice. I'm making notes.
And she's not going to say my aches and pains.
No. You are an amazing woman.
Oh, thank you.
And it was so good to see you at the ASEC conference. ASEC stands for the listening audience, American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And so this last one was in Monterey, California in June of this year. And it was really good to see you. And we were attending the workshop that Sherry Winston was giving.
Oh, she's fabulous. And she has a new book out now.
And they just sent it to me because she'll be my guest next week.
Oh, everyone's got to listen.
And it's Succulent Sexcraft.
You thought you knew your genitals? Listen to Sherry.
I know it because she's also an RN. She's been a midwife. Yeah, that's right.
You can introduce her that way if you want to.
Yeah. She had a rather cute sort of overview of how when a man is giving oral sex to his woman, a little bit of light munching on her labia can be quite sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
I don't, but you know what I remember is how when she talked about the clitoral legs and that only want to be touched after the arousal has been going for a while, not beforehand.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't realize that. I mean, I knew it intuitively, but I didn't know it. That's what was going on in order to convey it to a partner.
Yeah, those clitoral legs. A lot of people don't know about them.
Yeah. But I'm sure Sherry will want to talk about that.
Oh,
We'll steal her thunder. But tune in for clitoral legs.
There's more that we know now than we did even just several years ago. So let's talk a little bit about love maps, because I think in terms of preparing to date when we're over 50 or 60, it might be useful to think about your love map. And that can be the origins of your love map can be your parents and your early experiences and even pop culture.
Maybe you should define love maps for people who aren't so familiar with the term.
Yeah. What you want to do it? Because I bet you know. I'm happy to do it, too.
I bet you do it better, though. You do it.
Well, your love map is the internal components that you have for what you want and what you want in somebody. And navigating your love map to Chemistry Town can be kind of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Because the love map, well, John Money was the first, he was the psychologist who first talked about it. And he said that the circuitry of the elements that create a person's individual criteria for sexual chemistry is the love map.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for instance, age, this can be a problem for some people who are dating over 50 and beyond, because some people just can't compete with people who are actually young. Their love map can only sexualize people of a certain age who they need somebody, like some men need somebody definitely younger. And often this man does not do very well with his own aging as well.
Because that's such a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
A big issue, and I often am looking at profiles of men that attract me, and they say that they want someone who is younger than I am,
mm-hmm.
and yet they're not younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 70, and I wear it well, and yet they're saying, okay, maybe he's 71, and he doesn't want to date over 55 or something.
Uh-huh.
And I'll often send them a message and say, is that set in stone, or do you just not realize that there are women your age who are as vibrant as you are?
Mm-hmm.
Would you reconsider that age limit? And sometimes they'll say, I'd reconsider that age limit. And other times, of course, most of the time, they don't answer because they don't want to hear from a 70-year-old, which is okay. I still need to speak the truth.
Yes, and you do it so well in your books. So you need to continue to be authentic.
Thank you.
If a man's going to have a problem with your age,
then he misses out.
He misses out. Or with what you do for a living, he
mm-hmm.
misses out.
Yeah.
Now, you know, lots of people kind of fudge on their ages.
I'm trying to get them to stop doing that.
I know.
Because now that so many people do present themselves as anywhere around 10 years younger than they are, then
mm-hmm.
people assume that and add on another 10 years to whatever people have said. So I have right in my profile, I tell the truth about my age.
Uh-huh.
I really am whatever the age is. And
right.
So I think we need to do that, because what are we saying if we lie about it? We're starting a new relationship with a lie, for one thing. Going to
mm-hmm.
come out, and if he's thinking, oh, if he just knew me, then it wouldn't matter how old I am. Well,
mm-hmm.
okay then, just meet mm-hmm. him, but tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the point in lying about something that's a fact? It's not an interpretation.
Yeah, I had a little bit of a different take on that back when I was on the market. And it was, I fudged on my age by a few years since I look younger than my age. And And then, but I always told the date, especially if it was looked like it was going well in the first date, my actual age. But I sort of counted on that first meeting because I felt like I was in a marketplace and I wanted to give myself the best possible shot.
And that's understandable, mm-hmm. but do you see that you were buying into this society's myth that we are trying to combat that says mm-hmm. only the young are desirable?
Mm-hmm. I know.
So I just won't do that, and I may miss out on some wonderful people, but if that makes a difference, if someone can look at my profile and my photos and see how physically active I am, mm-hmm. one of my photos has me doing Pilates, and another one is dancing, and if someone is going to say, yeah, but look, it says she's 70, well then, okay, bye.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I think you make a very good argument, and it's better to be honest. It just seemed to work out for me, and I did attract a man that I'm now engaged to, that is in fact 3.5 years younger than I am, and would he have answered
you if you had revealed your real age?
I doubt it.
Really?
He would not have rejected me. No.
Oh, okay.
No, he would not have, because he says, you know, age is just a number.
Okay,
And I'm, you know, I'm a vital person and so on and so forth. But anyway, it's tricky. It's tricky. So let's talk a little bit about writing a good profile.
Have you got another couple of hours?
Yeah, and maybe we'll continue with this.
Because
Photographs that are...
Well, no,
you know,
I can also do... I was being flippant, but I do want to say a couple of things about the profile.
Mm-hmm.
Describe yourself accurately, but describe yourself in terms of who you really are, what is great about you. You know, don't be shy about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can ask your friends. So on a first meeting... What would you be impressed with, with me? What do I need to be sure and include in here?
Mm-hmm.
Show your profile after you've written it to some friends who know you well, who are going to be honest with you.
That's a good idea. Yep, that's a good idea.
You know, someone will say, oh, my gosh, this is all right, but you never know. You never say anything about how energetic you are, and
mm-hmm.
that's one of your best qualities. Or
mm-hmm.
The way you... you didn't mention that you volunteer for all of these agencies that help abuse children, and I think people would really be attracted to someone who does that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. You just can't look at yourself in the same way another person can.
Right.
And not to be so general that anyone could have written it. If everybody who says, I like long walks on the beach, actually did, the beaches would be packed.
It's
They'd
such a cliche
like
anyway, isn't it?
Subway at rush hour. They're not. So forget the walks on the beach and forget the I'm honest. Whoever said, yeah, I'm really a cheater, don't trust me. The very people who say I'm honest often aren't. So, you know, tell what's unique about you
and
include in that what you're looking for in a specific way. Not a checklist of you need not apply if you don't have all of these things, but have the checklist in your brain.
Right.
And write what you're looking for in an inviting way so that someone who's leafing through or scrolling through dozens of these profiles would stop at yours and say, oh, my gosh, she's describing
right.
me.
Right.
I want to meet her.
Exactly.
That's your goal, to make the person you're looking for, just that person, not any 100 other people, that person, to stop and go, oh, my God, I've got to contact this person.
Uh-huh. Yes. And I imagine you get men who... do call you because your profile is so inviting.
I don't get a lot of people, and that's okay because that's a screening test.
Yeah, it's a screening test.
I'm particular about wanting someone who is both intellectually fit and physically fit, because mm-hmm. those are qualities that I work on in myself.
Intellectually fit and physically fit.
Physically
That's
fit.
Really good.
And if someone doesn't have both of those,
uh-huh.
I could be a friend.
Right.
But I wouldn't want, you know, that's not the relationship I'm looking for.
Right.
So I'm clear about that, and I'm clear mm-hmm. about what I have to offer. And although I don't, I'm open-minded and communicative. I write books about senior sex, after all.
Right.
And so I put it right out there.
Yes, I like what you say. I happen to have in your file your bio, and it fits right here. Here. Joan's candid, upbeat manner led the media to dub her senior sexpert.
Right.
She's also been called our mighty middle-aged Aphrodite.
I love that.
The beautiful face of senior sex who turns up whenever the age group is ridiculed. And this part is so cute. And a, quote, wrinkly sex kitten, end quote.
Yes, I was called that by in a newspaper. And I loved it. And
mm-hmm.
Other people who knew me said, oh, dear, they shouldn't have said that. And I said, yeah, they should have. That's
yeah.
wonderful.
Yeah. No, it's great. And so looking forward to your next book. So is it kind of getting close to the, well, you said it'll be published in January?
In January, right. I'm proofreading the copy edited version right now.
Uh-huh.
And I'm delighted with it. It's, you might think if you've read my other senior sex books, what could be left to say?
Mm-hmm.
But what I did was delve in much deeper into the areas where people say, okay, I learned from Naked at Our Age that this is going on for me and this is something I can work on, but can we go deeper?
Right.
What positions are best for arthritis? What medications have sexual side effects? What can I do if depression is making me is obliterating my desire?
Mm-hmm.
These very specific things that affect so many people.
Yeah, oh,
and that's
so many.
What I'm doing in the new book. It's really called The Ultimate Guide. Obviously, nothing could ever be really the ultimate guide, but it is much more content-driven and deeper than any of the, and more expansive than the other books I've written.
Well, I look forward to talking to you about that. But we have so much more to talk about even before it comes out, so we'll plan on a conversation on this program. So you say January?
Yes.
Yeah. But then I'll be in touch with you because I would like to have you back in a month or so, and we'll have
like
a part.
Like I said, every other day is fine with me. There's nothing I'd rather do than talk about senior sex.
I know, and you're just such an articulate and lively guest, and so I'm very grateful for you, Joan.
Thank you, and I love the work you do.
Thank you. So, JoanPrice.com, and I will go and write this up, as I always do, so because a lot of people do listen to this archived. And I noticed on your blog you have lots and lots of radio shows that are archived that people can listen to.
I actually have stopped listing them all because I do so many, and and it's hard to, I could keep up, but I think everybody would go, wait, that's too self-serving. Don't list every show you've ever been on. So I don't. But I love doing radio and podcasting. I love doing TV, too. So when you're ready with your TV program, Diana, I invite you over.
I don't think that's going to be forthcoming. But but anyway, thank you, though. And
thank
I
you.
Look forward to speaking to you off the air, and we'll schedule a part two very soon. Joan, thank you for this last hour. It was just so enlightening and educational, and you're a delight.
Well, you are, too. It's my pleasure always to be on
thank
your show.
Thank you. So, everybody, Joan and I talked about it a little bit earlier in the show, but next week it'll be Sherry Winston talking about succulent sex craft. So tune in next week. Thanks again, Joan.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody.